Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I'm Leonard Maltin. Welcome to Maltin on Movies. Baron Vaughn is still shooting the final episodes of Grace and Frankie and is not with us today. But somebody special is with us today. Who, you may ask? Well, you know him. You love him from Freaks and Geeks. Oh. You know him. You love him from Undeclared.
Well.
You savored his performance in Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Basterds.
That's a lot of savoring.
I know. You've seen him in How I Met Your Mother, Modern Family, Entourage, Lost, Death Valley Days, Bringing Up Father.
Yep.
So many shows.
Car 54, Where Are You?
Car 54, Where Are You? On and on and on. The credits just never stop for Sam Levine.
Oh, thank you. It would be weird if after having clicked the link to listen to this episode, people were still like, I don't know who the guest is. I really hope Leonard gives a lengthy intro.
Well, now here's the thing is that I suspect a fair number of people listening will know you and perhaps know you best from your notorious and celebrated appearances on Doug Benson's Doug Loves Movies.
Indeed. Indeed. I it's one of the strangest things that with all the acting work that I've done, anytime I'm out and about in some other city and someone approaches me and says, hey, man, I really like you on Doug Loves Movies, that makes me so much happier than anyone telling me they like me.
Well, it's not just that you're on the show. Right. You are one of the champions of that game that he calls the Leonard Maltin game.
Yes, indeed.
And you have what I consider an uncanny knowledge. It's not just memory. It's knowledge of movie credits. Much more readily available to you than my brain will allow it to be available to me.
Well, that's sweet of you to say, but also you have a distinct disadvantage in that you, for the better part of your career, have been required to see many of the movies that you've seen, whereas I will seek out the films that I am interested in. I'm never forced against my will, Clockwork Orange style, to sit through Transformers movies, for example.
As I have.
Exactly. Yes, right. So I don't have to push out the movies that I'd like to remember with the new incoming crap.
That's good. That's good. I read on that subject, or a tangent on that subject, I read years ago that Carl Reiner read somewhere that for every new piece of information you acquire, especially when you reach a certain age, you lose another piece of information out of your brain. So he stopped reading credits.
It's a good call. Good call, Carl.
Yes. And you're also, I'm sure, recognized far and wide as the co-host of Kevin Pollak's Chat Show.
Yes, that also gives me great pleasure when people tell me they like me on the show and they enjoy the podcast. Mm-hmm. And I'm very happy. We've been doing that. It'll be 7 years in March.
Wow.
Which
– that's a hell of a run.
It just flew by, I got to tell you. I don't know how it lasted that long. Or how – not the last of it. I don't know how it's been that long and doesn't feel like it to me is what I mean.
But that's the nicest compliment you could pay to the whole endeavor, that you love it, you enjoy it so much.
I do. We've had incredible guests on. In fact, we some time ago had John Landis, who I know you just had on. And I listened to your chat with him and that was tremendous. I mean, he has some stories. I think he may have held the record on Kevin Pollak's Chat Show for the longest interview. I think he talked almost a full 3 hours. We had him for like 2 hours and 48 minutes.
Look
or something
at my face
like that
and ask if I'm registering surprise.
Are you registering?
No.
Yeah, exactly.
No, John can go on at length and never run out of good stories.
Nope. Never run out of good stories. Never feels like he's filling, you know, with for time or anything. Yeah. It's just he has quite the collection of events to discuss.
But now I'm sure you've accumulated quite a few because you've met so many interesting people with Kevin on that show.
Oh, yes. Oh, I mean, I wish I could put out a book about all the stuff that has been said before and after that podcast tapes. When the guests first get there, the stuff they say, oh, you know what, let's not talk about this. Mm-hmm. And then Kevin and I say, sure, can we ask why? And then they'll tell us, and, oh, yeah, no, we won't bring that up. And then afterward, they'll go, I got a little worried there because we almost talked about this. Oh, what do you mean? Well, this thing, I've got this legal problem. So we can never, it would be in poor taste if I ever wrote about it or talked about it other than this vagaries. But we've had some fun guests in there.
I should say, too, that Sam, because of his incredible encyclopedic mind, has taken to. If you've listened to the Leonard Maltin game on Doug Benson's show,
sure.
you know it all has to do with not just who is in a movie,
right.
but the order in which they their names appear
in you according to your billing.
Yes, and we use what is called in the trade billing order.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Sam mm-hmm. who said to me one day, you know, Marlon Brando got top billing in Superman, not Christopher Reeve, not Gene Hackman, mm-hmm. Marlon Brando. And because of that, in the 2015 edition of my annual movie guide, we fixed it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, it's there for the ages now, thanks to you.
Oh, my. Well, I am beyond thrilled to hear that I had an impact on what is considered by almost all to be the tome of movie tomes.
Well, thank you.
Well, please.
You. I mean, aw shucks.
Yeah, but you know that. I mean, that is the beginning and the end. And I've told you this many times in the past. The new Leonard Maltin movie guide coming into the house every year when it was published was quite a big deal in my family growing up.
To quote Milton Berle, mm-hmm. the late great Milton Berle. Oh, don't stop.
Yeah.
Thank you for the compliment.
Oh, yeah.
So how and when did you become a movie buff, would you say?
Well, it begins and ends with my parents. Movies have been near and dear to them. Movies were a big part of their courtship and how they fell in love and what they used to do. They would just go out and see movies all day and night. And so it was no small surprise that they introduced their love of cinema to their children, my brother Max and I, when we were young. And going to the movies was always a big thing. And watching movies, especially older movies at home, back when, you know, they would air on TV or we had quite the extensive VHS collection.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you're really little, they show, you know, the animated stuff. But mm-hmm. as we got a little older, my father couldn't wait to get my brother and I on the Three Stooges bandwagon
mm-hmm.
And some Abbott and Costello. And then for me, I think the turning point when I was really young was the Marx Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of opened my eyes to really comedic cinema and movies that made me just howl with laughter. Especially when you're very young, Harpo is the easiest to laugh
sure.
at for all the physical shtick. But then as I got a little older into my teens, I would really relish the verbal back and forths between Groucho and Chico. They were, I mean, so fast and so sharp and so funny. And that Animal Crackers is often the movie I cite for, this is why I love movies. Because this happened 52 years before I was born. And it makes me laugh harder than anything else.
How much do you charge not to play?
you couldn't afford us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Look it up, folks. It's Animal Crackers.
Not that I want to correct you, but I think it's how much do you charge not to rehearse.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. But you did correct me.
Well, I didn't mean to.
No,
I did.
But you corrected me correctly.
Well.
And that's what matters.
That is what matters. And I'm sorry. I apologize because you got the gist of it. And I didn't need it.
It's one of those things. If we're going to do it right, let's do it right.
It hurts in my brain when the line is said improperly, just because there's something wrong with my brain.
All right, so let's put that brain to work a little bit.
Okay,
right. What are some lines that people often misquote?
The most famous is "Luke, I am your father."
Mm-hmm.
Darth Vader never says those words.
Mm-hmm.
The line actually is "because I am your father."
Mm-hmm.
Another is "beam me up, Scotty."
Mm-hmm.
That was never uttered by William Shatner or any other crew member. Let's see, what's another common misquote? Oh, a common misquote from more modern day is, "I wish I could quit you." People often say, "I wish I could quit you." That is not the line. The line is, "I wish I knew how to quit you," from Brokeback Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these are things that I think about. These are things that bother me.
Keep going.
I'm sure there's more. Those are the ones that jump right up at me. Here's one that's so silly. My dear friend Martha Plimpton, who I adore, is in the movie Goonies.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever someone recognizes her from Goonies, she's very nice about it. Oh, thanks a lot. And then someone will say, what was that? And then she'll say, oh, that was Goonies, because Goonies never die. And then I have to politely lean in to whomever is sitting next to me and say, it's because Goonies never say die. That's the line is Goonies never say die. But I've given up that battle with her. That's how she remembers it, and I'll just let it go.
Did you ever get into the Little Rascals?
Yes. No, I didn't get into them like I got into
the reason Marx I Brothers. Ask is because of the source material for Goonies and some of the inspiration. There's a wonderful Little Rascals, Our Gang, comedy called Mama's Little Pirate.
Oh.
With Spanky, where the kids go into a cave that's filled with gold and treasures, and there's a giant guarding all these gold and treasures. And it's quite the fanciful adventure.
I'm sure.
And if you watched it just prior to watching Goonies, you'd say, wow, somebody grew up on the Little Rascals, I think.
That sounds pretty accurate, yeah.
Other lines, yes?
Oh, I'd stop.
I'm putting you on the spot because I
– You are. I'm sure I could come up with at least one or two more.
Because I love old movies so much, you know, the ones I think of are Play It Again, Sam.
Oh, they're – absolutely.
Which Bogart never says. The comedians of the time, the impressionists of the time, used to have Cary Grant saying Judy, 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 which he never said. Right. Of course, Johnny Weissmuller never said me, Tarzan, Eugene.
Right.
And that was, you know, so there's a lot of those from ancient times.
Sure. It's one of those things where it just becomes part of the lexicon in this misremembered. It's not quite the word factoid, but it's close enough that I'll point this out. The word factoid, many people think, means a little nugget of info, you know, like a pop-up video thing. In reality, and it may very well mean that now, but in reality, the word factoid means an incorrect piece of information that is widely regarded as correct because of its multiple appearances in print.
Well, so, I didn't know that.
Yeah, most people don't. And so that is – and factoid itself has become a factoid.
But of course, yes. But of course, the problem is, and as we know, usage is what ultimately wins out.
And that is correct.
And so the incorrect version becomes the correct
becomes the correct version by
common usage. I am still railing against the use of impact as a verb. Larry Gelbart, the great comedy writer, once said when he was a kid, the only thing that was impacted was a wisdom tooth. you know, there's a perfectly good word in the English language, affected, with an A, affected.
Yep.
I was affected by that. This may affect you in your job.
Affected.
The word has been obliterated because everybody's too busy using the newer word
impacted
or impactful.
Yeah.
So this is a one-man crusade, a lonely one-man crusade I have against that word.
I'll fight the fight with you, Leonard.
Thank you.
I will not let you fight this alone.
And the other one that even my daughter has taken up
from
many years ago is you cannot modify the word unique.
Of course.
Something either is unique or it isn't.
Right.
And people insist on saying very unique. Really unique,
extremely unique,
the most unique.
No, all of that.
Well, enough of that.
No, but just to end that, if I may, if you haven't ever looked at the Oxford English Dictionary or the OED, you should, because it's the only dictionary that organizes the definitions of certain words by chronologically.
Oh, interesting.
So the first – what that word meant first is very important, and you can see how words have taken on different meanings over time.
I begin to understand how you have memorized the cast lists in billing orders. This now begins to reveal itself.
It's partially because, A, as I told you, growing up and reading the book was a very big part of my life. But also, I always read the credits, and I was always paying attention to – long before I became an actor – always paying attention to how actors were billed in the opening credits and how I felt like you could watch the progression of a person's career as you watched their name move up higher and higher in the opening credits or in the end billing.
That's true. And it's an unfortunate thing that television is so dismissive of credits now.
Yes.
When I was growing up, you could read the credits.
Oh, yes.
And I did read the credits because I was compulsive like you.
Sure.
And so one night I was at there used to be an event called the Golden Boot Awards, honoring Westerns, TV and movie Westerns. And over the years, everybody came. I mean, Roy Rogers, Gene Autry, Clayton Moore, who played the Lone Ranger.
Not Jay Silverheels?
Yeah. Well, no, he had passed by then.
Oh.
But Iron Eyes Cody was there, though he turned out later not to be an actual American Indian. That's another story. Jimmy Stewart, anybody who made Westerns eventually wound up at this wonderful annual event, which was a fundraiser for the Motion Picture and Television Fund, which everybody supports. And so it was, you know, they were happy to be there.
Lovely.
Well, one day I found myself seated next to Leslie H. Martinson. And I said, he said it was Les Martinson. I said, are you Leslie H. Martinson? He said, yeah. Well, he directed hundreds and hundreds of television episodes of shows I used to watch growing up, 77 Sunset Strip, all the Warner Brothers TV shows, Maverick, all that stuff. And it's like, oh, I knew his name because of credits.
Sure.
I would never recognize the man in 100 years.
Right.
But I knew those credits, and now nobody can read credits.
No.
It's impossible.
It's impossible. It's always lower third at best.
Yeah, or squeezed.
Yeah.
And even with movies
television. If you watch movies, and what is – it was one thing if you watched a theatrical release on like a broadcast network, you know, like the old Channel 11 back in back in New York, you know, WPIX, when they would show the Sunday matinee or the Saturday matinee, and then the movie would end, and then the credits would get teeny tiny, and they would scroll by at 6x speed.
Yeah.
Only because they were legally obligated to air them. Yeah. That was one thing. But now I'll watch a movie on HBO or Showtime, and the movie will end, and then they'll condense the credits so they can air ads for their original programming. Now, that's all well and good, but I expect to see movies as they air, as they were shown in theaters, and that means from opening credit to end credit.
Yep.
I will not stand for this crunch screen.
As I will tell anyone who will listen to me, and that group is growing smaller by the day, a movie isn't over until you've been threatened with civil and criminal prosecution.
You are correct, sir.
Oh, and I'll tell one story about that. My old friend John Davison, who I met when I was at NYU, who went on to become a successful producer, working first for Roger Corman and then on a little movie called Airplane that sent his career soaring, and he did RoboCop.
Pun intended?
Well, when he did Airplane, the Zucker brothers and Jim Abrams had an idea, which he thought was hilarious. Mm-hmm. At the end of that paragraph about, you know, this film is protected by copyright, blah, 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 they wrote at the end, so there.
Yes, they did.
Now, John, knowing that somebody might object to this, had them – this is long before digital cinema. This is when they had to make physical 35-millimeter prints.
Yeah.
He had them print the last reel first in the lab, however many hundreds of prints they were making. And sure enough – after that happened, they found out somebody at Paramount noticed and read him the riot act. He said, you may have invalidated the whole copy. Well, of course, it didn't invalidate anything.
No.
It's just a little joke. But he got it in.
You're damn right.
He got it by. God bless him. Well, we're going to take a little break, Sam.
Okay.
When we come back, we'll talk about a lot of other things, including films you like, films you love, things that some people consider trivia that we both consider important information.
Absolutely, just part of life.
And how do you like that? I buried the lead. Okay, all will be revealed when we come back. Friends, I'm excited to introduce you to Howl FM, the best, most convenient way to listen to all the episodes of Malton on Movies. It's on the web at Howl FM and on the go with the Howl app. You can stream and download all Malton on Movies episodes that have been released in the past 6 months. Go beyond the audio with behind-the-scenes photos, commentaries, and more. You can even go further by upgrading to Howl Premium for only $4.99 a month. Get exclusive access to the entire Malton on Movies archive and to all the Earwolf and Wolf Pop archives. This includes all episodes older than 6 months. They've all been remastered and have no advertising. Only with Howl Premium, listen to hundreds of hours of Mark Maron's WTF archives. You can hear classic interviews with Robin Williams, Louis C.K., many, many more. And Howl has also partnered with some of your favorite hosts and comedians to develop Howl Originals. Those are brand new shows available only with Howl Premium. You can check out the great new series from Lauren Lapkus and the AV Club right now. There are already 10 brand new hilarious Howl Originals. We're adding new shows every week. Get access to all this exclusive content both on your phone and on your desktop with Howl Premium for only $4.99 a month. And with the promo code MALTIN, that's M-A-L-T-I-N, you get a full month of a free trial. Try it out. Go to Howl FM and enter code MALTIN at checkout. Remember, you can use Howl on your phone or your computer, but you can only use my promo code on Howl FM, the website. So go to Howl FM, that's H-O-W-L.FM, and use the promo code MALTIN, M-A-L-T-I-N, for one free month trial of Howl Premium. Give it a try. Welcome back to Malton on Movies. I am Leonard Malton, and with me is the knowledgeable, passionate, and often employed Sam Levine. You work a fair amount.
Thanks.
Don't you?
I'm going to knock on this wooden table. I work enough. Mm-hmm. I work enough. Yeah.
And but your most recent project is secretive. Is that right?
It is secretive at this point, mostly because I have no information about how people can see it. Mm-hmm. So it would just seem almost silly to me to start promoting it when it could feasibly be a year before anyone gets to see it.
Well, we'll just have to wait and find out what that is.
I'll be happy to come back, though. It's a streaming series that is high concept and a lot of fun. I'll even talk about the title. It's called Crunch Time. But as far as where and how people can see it, I will have to get back to you.
Okay. And you were just on At Midnight?
I was. I was on At Midnight with future guest of the show, Greg Proops. Mm-hmm. And we had a high old time. And Alex Borstein was also on the panel with us. And that was very exciting for me. I hadn't been on the show, but I've been a fan since it premiered a little over 2 years ago. And so I was excited to finally be a part of it.
Great.
Yeah.
Do you have favorite films in different genres?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't know that I've ever even thought about it, but I guess you have to. I don't know that I would ever classify my favorites by genre unless I were specifically asked, what's your favorite horror movie? What's your favorite Western? I guess I don't even classify favorites in terms of decade. I mean, my stock answer, since I'm in my teens, when people would ask, what are your top three favorite movies? It's typically been A Clockwork Orange, at the Marx Brothers, Animal Crackers, and The Godfather. Would probably be my top three in that order.
That would make an interesting mashup, wouldn't it?
It really would. It really, really would. I don't know that anyone's going to comfortably sit through that triple feature.
Maybe we can have Marlon Brando say, "Hello, I must be going." I mean, there's a lot of possibilities there.
It really is.
A lot of possibilities there. Yeah. And with Malcolm McDowell's eyes being forced open to watch all that occur. And to the tune of Gene Kelly singing in the Rain.
Do you know why that was the song that young Alex sings in?
No.
Oh, this is one of my favorite. It's because it's iconic in that movie, singing in the Rain. And there were a number of different songs apparently that that they wanted to use, that Kubrick was hoping to use, but it turns out that was the only song that Malcolm McDowell knew by heart and could sing all of. I shit you not. And that's why it wound up in the movie. According to legend, it was the only one that on the day – it was like, wait, you don't know it? No. Well, what songs do you know? I know Singing in the Rain. Okay.
I'll be darned.
And that's a little bit of –
Here's my indelible, if highly personal, memory of The Godfather. I saw it when it was new at the Rialto Theater in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey.
Oh, my – were we talking about
Nick? R.I.P. And which was a second-run movie theater.
Yep.
And I was there by myself, and there were two girls or young women behind me. I don't remember how old they were. And I had not read Mario Puzo's book. So this was all unfolding for me, and, you know, and it's, as we all know, it's an incredible film. And at a certain juncture in the story involving the actor John Marley, One of the girls said to the other, right, sitting right behind me, "Oh, this is where the horse's head is in his bed."
Oh, for God's sake.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. Don't ever.
No, don't do that.
Unacceptable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I you know, I've since gotten over that.
Well.
I haven't forgotten it, but I've gotten over it.
Right. Yeah, I feel like I just through life had heard about that mm-hmm. out of context mm-hmm. before I was old enough to see and appreciate the movie. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I probably knew it was coming as well, but the visual is still quite astounding.
Yeah, amazing.
Silk sheets.
Amazing. Yeah. We're going to talk about a film. I asked Sam ahead of time, was there a particular film he'd like to talk about? Something that perhaps isn't talked about very much nowadays.
Yeah, you use the words an unsung favorite.
Or an underappreciated
film. Yeah, an underappreciated favorite, yeah.
And now this is not way off the beaten path.
No.
This is a film that was nominated for 7 Academy Awards, including Best Picture.
I guess when I thought about it because a lot of the people of my generation, and I'm assuming the generation behind me, are not as familiar with this movie as I wish they were because it is so good.
Yeah. And the film is Broadcast News.
Not to be confused with Broadcast Nudes, which I'm fairly certain was the porn spoof.
I'm not even going to comment
on that. I think they put that joke in The Simpsons, by the way. They often on The Simpsons would, anytime they were in the seedy part of town, they'd pass a pornography theater and they would often have James L. Brooks titles, Sperms of Endearment was another one on marquees.
To explain further, James L. Brooks wrote, directed, and produced Broadcast News. Among other things. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about his credits. Sure. And he also was the sort of the midwife or godfather for The Simpsons.
Oh, yes.
Because he was the creator, producer of The Tracy Ullman Show. Mm-hmm. And The Simpsons, as you may or may not know, came to life from Matt Groening's comic panels mm-hmm. on that show as little segments.
Yeah, little interstitials.
So he's got a long history with The Simpsons.
Yes, he certainly
has. And they do with him as well.
Uh-huh.
We're going to talk a little about the film. We're going to talk a little about him. But I thought it'd be interesting to take a look at what else came out that year.
Sure.
So I looked up it lost all the Oscar nominations, mm-hmm. and they were all well-deserved. But The Last Emperor was the big film that year. Right. Won 9 Academy Awards, right. including Best Picture.
Right.
And other winners included Moonstruck and Dirty Dancing and Babette's Feast and Wall Street, mm-hmm. The Untouchables. So, all right. But here are the hits of that year in order of box office success.
Oh, boy.
1987. No, it's actually a pretty good list.
Oh, was it good?
The 80s is not my favorite decade.
I'm well aware.
But this is a pretty good list.
Yeah.
3 Men and a Baby.
All right.
A very entertaining movie.
Yeah, all right.
That's said grudgingly.
I mean, I get why it was the number one box office movie of the year,
All right. Fatal Attraction.
All right.
Yeah. Beverly Hills Cop 2.
That's it. That's a shame.
That's too bad. Right.
Yeah.
Good Morning Vietnam.
Okay.
Moonstruck, one of my
all-time
favorites.
Back on track,
favorites.
Yes. Right, absolutely.
Right. The Untouchables.
Okay.
Terrific film.
Yeah.
Secret of My Success.
Oh,
this was at the height of
Michael J. Fox's
stardom, I guess. Stakeout.
Oh, the first one.
The first one, yes. Lethal Weapon.
The first one.
A very good movie.
Sure.
Dirty Dancing.
Nobody Puts Baby in the Corner.
The Witches of Eastwick.
Okay.
Predator.
All right.
And then tied for 18th and 19th place,
ooh.
Broadcast News and The Living Daylights.
What?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
That bums me out. That really bums me out.
In which direction does that bum you out?
The Living Daylights, I mean, with all due respect to Timothy Dalton, who's a fine actor and I'm sure a wonderful man, those hit a creative low point for the Bond movies. And that was on par financially, certainly not creatively, but financially with Broadcast News is a bummer to hear.
Oh, well.
Yeah, now, what are you going to do?
If you're not familiar with James L. Brooks, I mean, he really came into our lives through television.
Mm-hmm.
Because he started out as a writer for hire on a whole raft of TV situation comedies, The Andy Griffith Show, That Girl, one of my favorites, My Mother, The Car. Uh-huh. But then he was the co-creator and producer and often writer of The Mary Tyler Moore Show, uh-huh. its spinoffs Phyllis and Rhoda mm-hmm. and Lou Grant, and then Taxi.
A little show called Taxi.
And then The Tracy Ullman Show, mm-hmm. which gave birth to The Simpsons.
Yep.
I mean, this one guy.
Yeah.
One guy.
Yeah.
His first screenplay, which he did not direct, was Starting Over.
Mm.
Pretty good film with Burt Reynolds and Candice Bergen and Jill Clayburgh. And then he wrote and directed Terms of Endearment.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just a wonderful movie. That was in 1983. Absolutely. It took 4 years for him to take another turn yep. at making a movie, and that was Broadcast News.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll skip a few for now.
Okay.
In 1997, a decade later, he made As Good As It Gets.
Sure.
Which he co-wrote with Mark Andrus, and which, of course, was very much celebrated.
Wonderful movie.
And won Jack Nicholson an Oscar. And
Helen Hunt.
And Helen Hunt.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a man who's had a big impact on our popular culture. He also, let us not forget, he discovered, if that's quite the word, and launched the careers of Wes Anderson and Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
Because at Sundance, he saw their short film Bottle Rocket.
Bottle Rocket, yeah.
And encouraged them, and I think helped produce, the feature-length version of Bottle Rocket.
I believe you are correct.
And so he really gave them their entree to the movie business.
Yeah.
And that has had, you know, great reverberations for both of those guys.
Sure.
You know, Wes Anderson behind the camera, Owen Wilson sometimes behind the camera, mm-hmm. but more often in front.
Yeah.
Including co-starring in a later James L. Brooks movie.
That's right.
So I say all this because his most recent movies have been, no way to prettify this, have been a disappointment.
They've been different. They've been different. The tones have been a little different.
You know, there's not an easy way to say good things about Spanglish or even I'll Do Anything, which was supposed to be a musical.
I'm actually a fan of Spanglish.
Okay.
I mean, the thing about a lot of his movies, especially the later ones, you know, they say write what you know. And James has been or Jim actually, as his friends call him, mm-hmm. he's been a pretty successful guy for a very long time.
Absolutely.
So it is no surprise to me that most of his movies, either the protagonist or someone the protagonist has to deal with, is a person of means and success.
Mm-hmm.
In Spanglish, Adam Sandler's character is a very successful chef. In As Good As It Gets, Jack Nicholson's a very successful author. I understand why some people maybe have a hard time identifying with those characters, but I don't. Mm-hmm. And not because I'm tremendously successful, but because I guess it's just easier for me to understand, I get why he's writing that, and mm-hmm. and these could be real feelings, and maybe on a different level they work, and okay. And so I didn't mind Spanglish in that regard. I really didn't.
You know, I go into every movie wanting to like it.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely – that's the truth. That's the plain truth. I don't go gunning for movies.
No.
But when I'm seeing a movie by somebody I really respect and admire,
mm-hmm.
I'm especially eager for it to be good.
Sure.
And when I went to see How Do You Know in 2010
right.
with Reese Witherspoon, Owen Wilson, mm-hmm. Paul Rudd, and Jack Nicholson, who has worked yep. you know, frequently and successfully with
yes.
Jim Brooks.
Yes.
You know, it's sort of heartbreaking yeah. when it isn't good. And yet, I don't want to sound like an ingrate.
Mm-hmm.
This man has given us so much great entertainment.
Yeah.
And so much joy. And his work is so intelligent
mm-hmm.
and enriching
mm-hmm.
and nourishing in so many ways. So I don't want to be taking pot shots at him.
No. I have the great pleasure and honor of knowing Jim now. I mean, we play poker together, and he's a tremendous man. And so I certainly don't want to say anything that would disparage his work.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, How Do You Know was not, the same as you know, broadcast news mm-hmm. or terms of it's just a very different movie, mm-hmm. I think is the thing. And I don't know, it's more indicative of maybe modern day stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, as a weird side note, I think that was Jack Nicholson's last on camera role.
You may well be right.
I believe that was it for him. He never really announced a retirement, but it's been a good mm-hmm. 5 years. So I don't know if he's just waiting for a great script, but I feel like that might have mm-hmm. been it for Jack.
But we hope not permanently.
No. Oh, no, certainly not.
No. All right. We're going to talk more about Broadcast News, a film that if you saw as I did mm-hmm. when it came out and haven't seen since, well worth revisiting,
absolutely.
As I did last night. And I had just a delightful time doing that. And if you've never seen it, put it on your must-see list.
I would almost say, now that you and I are about to really jump into it, if you've not seen Broadcast News, please stop playing this podcast. Watch it now and then come back to us.
Well, I would say finish listening to this podcast. And then
– well, it's going to be chock full of spoilers.
No. We don't want to do that too much.
Okay.
We don't want to do that too
much.
Well,
then how can
we
really talk about the ins and outs of the movie?
We can talk about some – well, you know what? You'll find out in just a minute.
All right.
You all know Amazon. And since you hopefully love our show too, here's a way you can love both at the same time. The next time you want to shop at Amazon, don't go there directly. That's for losers. Instead, go to wolfpop.com/Amazon. And the prices will be the same great Amazon prices you know and love. But here's the difference. We'll get a sweet, sweet kickback. So you don't have to pay an extra dime. But Wolfpop gets credit from Amazon. And that adds up. Helps us keep the engineers happy and the microphones turned on. So remember, go to wolfpop.com/Amazon. And bookmark that puppy too, so that every time you need to buy something, be it batteries or a Kindle or a television or a cardigan or a last-second present for your loved one's birthday, you use our special link, and that'll help us earn cash at the same time. It's a win-win. Thanks.
Welcome back to Malton on Movies. I'm Leonard Malton.
I'm Sam Levine. I got to say, those breaks are awfully fast.
Well, everything's relative.
No, I'm sure in
everything's
the,
relative,
the podcast listener, there's a few minutes in there. But here in the studio, it's been 4 seconds.
You know, a magician doesn't reveal all his tricks, Sam.
I'm sorry.
You know, talk about spoilers. My goodness.
I feel like.
My goodness. Well, so here's Broadcast News.
Yes. Well,
so when was the last time, and again, generalizations are very tough and very mm-hmm. tricky. When was the last time you saw a mainstream, mm-hmm. major studio Hollywood movie mm-hmm. in the general category of romantic comedy with such complex mm-hmm. and articulate mm-hmm. and unpredictable characters yeah. as this?
Yeah.
The film opens – this is not a spoiler. The film opens with Holly Hunter. Well, it opens with the three protagonists' children.
Yes, children, yeah.
Then we see them all grown up right. and pursuing their careers in television news.
Yes.
When we first see Holly Hunter, she's bawling. Mm-hmm. She's crying.
Yes.
It's just something she does.
Yep.
We never learn exactly why. We can put together the pieces of that puzzle
sure.
for on our own terms and how we want to interpret that. But that's just for starters.
Yep.
That's just for starters.
Yep. There is a line in the movie where Holly Hunter is getting into a bit of an argument with her boss.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, you and I just disagree on that. And she says, well, I think you're wrong. And he says to her, it must be nice always thinking that you're the smartest person in every room and you always know what's right. She says, no, it's awful.
Oblivious of the fact that he's been sarcastic and
of course.
Snarky in saying yeah. that to her. She takes yeah. it totally seriously.
Yeah. yeah. She says, no, it's terrible.
Yeah.
And that's – I think that's her character in a nutshell really
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
In not quite the similar way, but in the same way that – you know, hearing a classic line of dialogue slightly off, my brain, I can't not – like, no, it's awful that I have this thing inside yeah. me that yeah. I can't just let it go.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the worst part about me.
Yeah. If you don't know anything about the film, the three leads, Holly Hunter plays a very driven news producer.
She's great at her job, just great. And her career kind of gobbles up her life.
Oh, very much.
Pretty much. Except that she has a very close friendship with Albert Brooks.
Who I believe was nominated for an Academy Award.
Yes, he was, for Best Supporting Actor. The great, great Albert Brooks, who I love unabashedly.
Oh, yes.
And this is one of the handful of films that he didn't write or direct, but he gives a great performance here as a hardworking, brilliant news reporter who is frustrated beyond words at the fact that he's in television news where everything matters, all that matters, it seems, is your appearance.
Yep.
And the personification of that is a character played by William Hurt.
Who is great in this.
Who is, yes, who just comes onto the scene and who's a good-looking guy and has the demeanor, it seems, of a newsman, but no knowledge.
Right.
And as he says early on to Holly Hunter, I'm no good at what I'm a success at. So he's very self-aware, which is rare for a character like that and for a person like that.
Yes, it is.
This may be the most unrealistic part of the movie.
Well, it's one of those things. I've only known a handful of people in my entire life who will openly say, "You know, I'm not the brightest bulb, but whatever, I got a good heart."
Yeah.
And for better or worse, that's what William Hurt's character is. And his character says once or twice, you know, I know I come from sports.
Yeah.
And this isn't, and so you guys maybe think of me, and you know, but I want you to know I'm going to do my best out there.
Right. The ongoing conflict in the movie, and it's a really serious, more serious than you might expect because of the nature of Holly Hunter's character, is that William Hurt, who is very attractive and who is immediately attracted to her, represents everything she despises about journalism and where it's headed in the television era. She doesn't dislike it. She despises it to the marrow of her bones. And yet she is attracted to him.
Yep.
And Albert Brooks has never really consummated in any way his relationship with her.
No.
He's never had the guts to just come out and say he loves her.
The common terminology would be the friend zone.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So that's the setup of the movie. That's just a superficial description because this film has people in it who are so talented, so good, and incidents and turns of events that you could never lay out in a simple way.
No, there are magnificent, interesting plot twists and where the movie goes, and none of it feels forced, and it's very interesting to watch the process, and it's also interesting to watch the process of how live news broadcasts were put together back in the 80s, and I imagine they're fairly similar today. It's a tremendous movie. I so love the dialogue in this movie.
Oh, it's great.
There is not a single line that is unnecessary. And that's quite a feat for a movie, I think.
What's interesting too is that for a movie that is so dialogue driven and where the dialogue is so exceptionally good, the things that I retain from it, and we're not going to spoil all of these, are visual moments.
Sure.
There's one superior sight gag sequence. I don't know how else to describe it. And there's also a sequence that's not giving much away where Joan Cusack playing a
PA,
a production assistant or associate producer of the nightly news, has to frantically run with a 3/4-inch tape in hand to the control room to get it there with moments, milliseconds to spare.
Otherwise, it will be dead air on national television.
Right. And so those are some of the things I retain from this movie, which is not the dialogue necessarily.
Sure.
But those visual moments. It has that too.
Mm-hmm.
It has that too. And there's some great camera moves. Michael Ballhaus was a cinematographer.
Yep.
But what's interesting too is I saw this, if I can add another personal side note here, when I was still fairly fresh and new in the television business, and was working at Entertainment Tonight when it was a very hot show.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very hot show.
You don't have to tell me. It was nightly viewing in my household.
And I was experiencing some of this. I was learning to edit pieces. Mm-hmm. I would sit with an editor, as she does in the movie, as Holly Hunter does in the movie. But it was so stimulating to get to do that. And then we did have deadlines. So we were not a live show, but we had to make the satellite feed and all that. And there was one day when I finished an obit, which was part of my beat there at ET, and our uplink was down the block and across the street. We were still on Vine Street in Merv Griffin's old studio, and somebody had to physically run down the street, cross the traffic-y corner there at Sunset and Vine, take it into what was then the CNN building, up an elevator to like the 21st floor, and we were watching a live feed on our monitors. And waiting and hoping, because we all watched the guy run down the street.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
And we watched the live feed, and it went black for like 5 seconds, and then it came up. So
that's pretty good.
I experienced a little taste of that.
That's pretty
which made me relate even more. You know, the only thing that really dates this film is the women's makeup and hair.
And the wardrobe choices are a little dated.
And the 3/4-inch tapes.
Right.
But everything else about it seems very, very fresh.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, Joan Cusack has big hair.
Well, sure.
She's got big, 80s big hair.
Yes.
And lots of makeup. And even Holly Hunter, who never wore a lot of makeup in any role that I can remember, is wearing a fair amount of makeup here. So I mean that would sort of peg it as 80s-ish.
Yes, but it's not an in your face 80s.
No,
stuff.
No, not at all. I read online from more than one source, so I guess it must be true that Brooks wrote this part for Deborah Winger, who had done such a wonderful job for him in terms of endearment.
Yes, that is true.
And that days before, according to one source, 2 days before they were to start shooting, he had to cast someone else and got Holly Hunter, who just seems so perfect in the role.
Perfect for the role.
You can't picture anybody else in that part.
No, absolutely not. I'm sure Deborah Winger would have done a fine job.
Sure.
But Holly Hunter absolutely owned this part.
Mm-hmm.
The casting in the movie from top to bottom is perfection.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, getting his old buddy Jack Nicholson in there.
Yes.
Who plays the network anchor. Yes. The big nightly network anchor and
the sober, gracefully aloof.
Mm-hmm. and there is a wonderful scene where they're in the control room in their local DC station, and they're watching him on the monitors of the live feed, and he does not realize that they are watching him, and how that plays out is quite splendid.
Yep. You know, there's so many films of the 80s. And 90s, and let's say 70s, 80s, 90s, which I still consider contemporary, although they're now all celebrating anniversaries on Blu-ray. So I can't pretend they're brand new anymore, though I'd like to delude myself that they are.
Sure. They're new to you.
But let's face it, somebody who's just growing up today and is interested in movies and maybe is 20 years old or 25 years old or 15 years old.
Yeah.
Has to seek them out now.
Yes.
They're not part of their experience of movie going.
Right.
So there are a lot of films that have fallen into a kind of a limbo in terms of the zeitgeist and the current conversation of what's going on movie-wise.
Right.
And I suppose this is one of them.
It is. I mean, and of course, you know, you teach a class on film, so you don't need me to tell you that, of course, one of the problems is that with each passing year, there is more content.
That's right.
There is never going to be less content than there was the year before.
Yep.
So it just gets harder and harder for younger people to catch up without feeling like they are ignoring the new stuff that they want to be a part of the conversation.
That's right.
So to that end, you and I, and you much more so than I, are lucky that we have been alive longer and have had less to worry that we're missing out on by watching, you know, the same great movie 4 or 5 extra times and not watching a new one, a newer one.
Yeah.
And I feel bad about younger people feeling like, oh, well, if I don't see all the Twilight movies, I won't be able to talk to my friends about it. But even though my dad says this this really great movie I should watch, I'll get to it eventually. No, you won't. Watch it now. Watch it while you're young. The Twilight movies will always be there also. But there are certain movies that just that mean so much to you if you see them at the right time in your life.
Yes.
You know, like Ferris Bueller's Day Off to a 14-year-old is just going to be 10 times the movie it is to a 45-year-old.
Absolutely true.
And so I think that's the most important thing. And this is maybe the only reason I ever want to have a child. is so that I can properly show him or her the movies they should see at the appropriate time for the most meaningful impact.
Sam, it's a good reason to have a kid.
Okay, great.
It's very good. And there's nothing, and let me tell you, there's nothing more rewarding than having that experience.
Sure.
I say as a parent.
Yeah.
It's been a wonderful experience to introduce Jessie to films she might not have otherwise seen.
Yeah.
And watch her reaction and get her reaction.
And boy, does she have a leg up with you as her dad in that regard, a man who has literally seen
dozens.
If you had
untold
to,
dozens,
could
of
you
movies.
Quantify it?
It's in the thousands, but I don't know. I used to keep track. I don't know.
It's got to be in the tens of thousands by now. It really has to.
I don't know. It's a lot.
My goodness.
Of course, I only remember dozens.
Right. But, oh, no, that's for sure.
That's another story. Sam, thank you so much for dropping by today.
Oh, Leonard, this has
so
been
fun to talk about
a treat of treats. There is nothing more that I enjoy.
As Sidney Greenstreet says in The Maltese Falcon, I like talking to a man who likes to talk. I think that's what he says. I hope he says so too.
I don't know that one well enough, but I'll defer to you on this.
If people want to check up on you and see what you're up to, where can they do that?
You can always find me on Twitter. I'm at Sam Levine, Sam with two M's, SammLevine. And you can catch me just about every Sunday as we stream live on Kevin Pollak's chat show. And that uploads to iTunes and other sites the following Tuesday. So check that out.
Check them both out, yeah, for sure. And you can find me on Twitter, at Leonard Maltin. And online at my website, leonardmaltin.com. And I am happy to say again that four of my earlier film books are now back in print as ebooks, thanks to Amazon Kindle.
Hey, hey.
And if you're still wanting to have a physical book in your hand, that's possible too. You can do print on demand.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen the results, and they look like real books.
Oh, I think they are.
I mean,
really?
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So The Great Movie Comedians, from Charlie Chaplin to Woody Allen, and Selected Short Subjects, from Spanky to The Three Stooges, and The Real Stars, about great character actors and supporting actors from Hollywood's Golden Age, and a book I did not write, but I did edit, called B-Movies, a magnificent book by the late Don Miller about the golden era of B-Movies. They're all available on Amazon. You can go to my author's page on Amazon and find them there. And thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting our show. Please do tell your friends. Tell even acquaintances. That would be good too. And we will see you next time.
Hey, it's Sean Clements from Hollywood Handbook, and that's an Earwolf podcast. And it's come to my attention that Earwolf and Howl has been doing a nefarious activity where they are sneaking clips from other shows into the end of podcasts. And it happened on ours, and I thought it was morally questionable at best, and we would never do that to you, try to trick us into listening to our podcast. So this is just me making an announcement to you, a listener of a different show, that we will never, ever try to sneak a clip of our show into the end of another show, because frankly, it's disgusting to me. And I hope that they do not attach a clip of my show that they feel would be a highlight and a selling point to an uninitiated listener onto the end of this message. It would defeat the entire purpose of what I'm saying, and they promised me they wouldn't. And so now what's going to happen is I'll stop talking and nothing else will play afterwards, and that's the way I want it, and that's what's good, and you're welcome for me being so righteous.
There are just so many other options for who could have done this. Some of the really tough guys out there.
Maybe someone actually tough.
Who should have been the Batman. For example, How about one of these Metallica guys?
Nothing's tougher than rocking
out
so hard
on the drums.
It could have been, and I hate to say this, but what about Kim Jong-un?
Yes, what about Kim Jong-un?
Who's scarier and tougher? And who's rich and can afford all those gadgets?
Yes.
Hollywood Handbook.
Pop.
Pop?
Pop.
This has been a Wolf Pop production, executive produced by Paul Scheer, Adam Sachs, Chris Bannon, and Matt Gourley. For more information and content, visit wolfpop.com.